in this earlier courtship dating period, the neurodivergent individual may seem very flowery and into the relationship and, you know, make a lot of effort. And then once the relationship is stable and is long term, the neurodivergent person kind of stops making that effort. And it's not because they are being lazy or because they are being any of those things. And it's definitely not because they don't care. So a lot of times the partners feel like they've stopped caring. And it's not that.
They've changed.
It's not that. It's that the neurodivergent person, they always have someone they feel is their safe person. Someone they can be themselves with. So what happens is they stop masking.
Hello everyone, I welcome you all to Imperia Connects, the podcast focused on family well-being. Often when we consider diversity, we think of characteristics such as race, age, gender and sexual orientation. But there is also diversity in the way people think, process thoughts and experiences, and interact with the world around us. Today, we are going to talk about neurodiversity, neurodiverse relationship, and challenges in the workforce. It is thought that about 15 to 20% of the world's population is neurodivergent. To discuss on this topic, I would like to welcome our guest today, who is the founder of Speech Dysphagia Language Clinic, a leading speech occupational therapy and counseling center in Mumbai. Also a certified couples counselor and a speech language pathologist. Let's welcome our guest, Dr. Marzia Maskati Shivkramani. Thank you so much, Doctor, for coming to our podcast and accepting our invitation.
Thank you so much for inviting me and talking about a topic that I love.
So, Doctor, to get the clarity on today's topic, let's start with a simple question, that is, what is neurodiversity and what are some examples of neurodivergent conditions?
So, neurodiversity is believed to be a different wiring system of the brain. It's not a deficient system, it's just a different system. And examples of neurodivergent conditions, the most common ones are autism and ADHD, but this also includes dyslexia and OCD and bipolar disorder. All of those come under the neurodivergent umbrella.
Oh, so the range is quite wide, I can say that.
It is very wide and the traits overlap a lot. So a lot of people who have dyslexia may have traits of ADHD, may have traits of autism. So all of those kind of coexist.
So do you think, Doctor, this is a recent concept?
The term is more recently used. The different wiring has been there since the time there were humans on this earth. But a lot of the terminology is new. And a lot of the labels are giving people a sense of belonging to a community more than feeling different or disordered.
So you mean off late we have started differentiating and that's why there is a whole lot of community which we can see now in place.
Yes, so off late I think people have become more aware of who they are, what they need to be successful, what they need to be comfortable, and that kind of has helped build this community.
So do you think, Doctor, it's also a disability?
So a huge part of the neurodivergent community views it as a disability. They do view some of the traits they have as disabled traits. But the earlier times, this fell under the medical model of disability, where therapists and doctors used to say that your child has a disability, or as an adult you have a disability, and you have to learn how to fit into the neurotypical norms. So therapy used to focus on teaching people how to mask their neurodivergent traits and how to fit and seem more normal. But now that has changed, and we have what we call neurodiversity affirming therapy, where you help the person realize their strengths, what are their challenges, and accept them for who they are.
Now the scenario has changed as compared to earlier times, and the traditional method must have also changed how you deal with this type of people.
Right, exactly. Okay. So earlier methods used to focus on, like I said, teaching neurotypical social skills, things like, you know, making eye contact, things
forcing
them to do that, being like, if you don't look, nobody will understand that you're talking to them.
So things their own identification was in crisis.
Correct. And in doing all these things, in trying to fit in and be more neurotypical, they were masking their own traits. And that led to a lot of anxiety,
stress,
a lot of stress. And all those things. So it came out somewhere else.
Yeah, so it means you are always putting a mask on your face and trying to be fit in that crowd where everybody is there. Now also you differentiate between like mild, severe or moderate type of autism is still valid?
So we don't use the labels of mild, moderate, severe anymore. Okay. What we say is the diagnosis is autism. Some people with autism have, like we say, higher support needs. So if you have someone who is autistic but is not speaking, so then they have higher support needs. Okay. But then there are people with autism who have lower support needs. So they may not need help with things like speech or things like social communication or things like that. But they may have other challenges. So earlier what used to be severe or what we say is high support needs may be some autistic individuals who have self-injurious behaviors. These repetitive kind of behaviors that can hurt themselves.
Yes.
So that we consider, you know, someone who would require some supervision and support.
Monitoring all the time.
Exactly.
Okay. So now let's speak about relationship. So doctor, what do you mean by neurodiverse relationship? So can you highlight some points on that?
Sure. So I've trained as a neurodivergent couples counselor and I work with a lot of adults who are neurodivergent.
Okay.
And like I said, a lot of these adults are all diagnosing themselves later in life. So they've all been missed as kids. And the reason they've been missed as kids is because, you know, they're intelligent, they've managed in school, they've done well. So that's why none of it has really come up.
Okay.
But then what happens is later when they get into a relationship, sometimes when the partner is neurotypical, there becomes a communication clash between the two.
Yes.
Because, like I said, each one's communication style is different. So whereas a neurodivergent person may say things very directly, the partner may take it as they are being so blunt and so rude.
Yeah.
How can they say something like that to me? So it's, you know, the counseling involves each one understanding the other's communication style.
So open communication can become a problem here because somebody may feel that it's very blunt.
Exactly.
Whereas that is, mind is wired actually.
Exactly. To be honest, to be truthful, to say, you know, like a simple example, you know, do I look good in this dress? No, I think this color doesn't look good on you. So, you know, because that's what honestly the person may be feeling.
Yes.
But the partner may get very offended.
Doctor, what are the challenges, like big challenges they face in their relationship?
So one big red flag, like we'd say, or one big where people seek out help is in this earlier courtship dating period, the neurodivergent individual may seem very flowery and into the relationship and, you know, make a lot of effort. And then once the relationship is stable and is long term, the neurodivergent person kind of stops making that effort.
Oh, okay.
And it's not because they're being lazy or because they're being any of those things. And it's definitely not because they don't care. So a lot of times the partners feel like they've stopped caring.
Okay.
And it's not that.
They have changed.
They've changed. It's not that. It's that the neurodivergent person, they always have someone they feel is their safe person. Someone they can be themselves with. So what happens is they stop masking.
Okay, so they come in that comfort area.
They come in their comfort zone and they stop masking. So when I say stop masking, that need to make small talk, like we say, like that they have to put on at work or at parties or whatever, they stop doing it at home.
Okay.
And the partner feels like there's no interest only in this relationship. But that's not the case.
Okay.
So this kind of gap sometimes leads to problems in the relationship.
Don't have that common language between the partners.
And neurodivergent individuals tend to be very task-oriented. So what they will do for their partner is do all the tasks for them, you know, take care of, say, taxes, take care of bills, take care of this, take care of... It's their way of showing that, okay, you know, I'm invested in this relationship, I care, I'm doing all this.
Mm-hmm.
But the partner may want more
intimacy,
gifts, intimacy, you know, compliments.
Uh-huh.
And then when all of that is not there, then they feel the person doesn't care.
Okay. So. Especially in Indian culture. In that case, doctor, if another partner is neurodiverse, throughout their life, they are adjusting without knowing that they are neurodiverse, one of the partner. Then sometimes it happens that it lead to divorce also. What do you say on this?
So, like I mentioned, when you have a couple where one may be neurotypical, one may be neurodivergent, the neurotypical partner ends up adjusting a lot more.
Okay.
Because they keep adjusting, not knowing what they are doing wrong or this thing to cause this lack of connection, like we say. And what ends up happening is a lot of their needs are not met.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that may happen. Another thing that may happen is that the neurotypical partner may push the neurodivergent partner to become more neurotypical.
Yes.
In which case, the neurodivergent partner really has to mask, adjust, all of those things. And again, their needs may be suppressed and not met.
Okay.
So either way may happen. If we have two neurodivergent people who are together,
mm-hmm.
in that case also sometimes, if someone has more autism traits, someone has more ADHD traits, actually that combination really attracts.
Okay.
So, so if that ends up happening also, they are very different in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like someone who has more autistic traits tends to be very routine, very
particular,
very
detailing.
Particular, very ordered and mm-hmm. organized. Whereas the person with more ADHD traits tends to be very last minute and, you know, all over the place.
Churl
so that
types.
Exactly. So that really causes a clash.
Right.
And then especially when it comes to parenting, it's very different parenting styles.
Exactly.
So that also causes a clash.
Okay.
So there are, I mean, divorce rates
because of
are there because of neurodiversity. Sometimes it's hard to know what the actual rates are because the neurodiversity has not been recognized.
So doctor, how are you different from a marriage counselor? Because it looks very similar.
So it is similar,
mm-hmm.
but the thing is that whether you're doing marriage counseling, whether you're doing individual counseling,
mm-hmm.
I think what is most important for psychologists across the world is to be trained in neurodiversity.
Okay.
Because if the psychologist is not picking it up,
mm-hmm.
then the therapy is not going to work.
Okay.
Because if you don't take that neurodiverse framework in mind, then you're using therapy like CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. You're using talk therapy, which is proven to not work for neurodivergent individuals.
Okay.
So then what ends up happening is that it just doesn't work.
So you're not working on the whole, you're just working on parts and that's
exactly.
the
exactly, you're working on symptoms without getting the underlying cause. And then that's why there's no follow through. It doesn't last. You know, the couple will come. They understand everything in the session, but then there's no follow up.
Okay.
So whereas therapy for neurodivergent couples is very, very specific.
Okay.
It's very, like I said, because neurodivergent individuals are very task driven.
Oriented.
The therapy is also very task oriented.
Okay. Can you give some examples, doctor?
Sure. So it's very direct work.
Okay.
It's like I mentioned about compliments.
Mm-hmm.
So if we figure out between a couple that one person's love language is getting words of affirmation, like we say, I actually give the partner a list of affirmations.
Really, doctor?
And, yes, and say, practice these
and
start using them because it's important to your spouse. So it's realizing what is important to the spouse and then making sure that happens.
So they put effort in.
So they make effort. Now, a lot of times the spouse turns around and says, but this is just rehearsing. I don't want this fake nonsense.
Okay.
So fair
satisfaction
enough.
Is not
fair
there.
Enough. But the thing is, what happens is once the neurodivergent individual gets the hang of it,
Then
they're able
understand.
To do it themselves.
Okay.
They just need that little push. And it needs to be that very tailor-made, specific therapy with, you know, follow-up. Okay, this week, are you going to do this? Are you going to do this? Rather than talking about feelings. Because when talking about feelings, you're just going around in circles with the neurodivergent individual and no behavior changes.
Okay. Okay, and so how many therapies do you give generally for a couple, like
sessions?
Yes.
So it depends on the. So usually a couple will reach out when they are in crisis.
Yes.
So once we get past that crisis, so if we are, they are in crisis, we'll do like 1-2 sessions a week.
Okay.
Once they get past the crisis, they do check in as and when they something comes up. Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Doctor, as scientists have said that this is not a disease at all, and so just that their mind is wired differently, so sometimes they are little sensitive to the smell or could be the loud music, etc. What are the unique strength they bring to the relationship, and also how does it add color to our society, doctor?
That's a great question. So neurodivergent people have a lot of strengths. Mm-hmm. They tend to be, like we say, very detail oriented. So it's details first, concept later.
Okay.
So they notice things that a lot of neurotypical people may miss.
Okay.
Their other strength is they pick up patterns very easily. Mm-hmm. And that includes patterns in behavior.
Okay.
So many neurodivergent individuals are psychologists, are therapists, are all of that because they're very good in picking up patterns in behavior.
Oh, lovely.
So usually neurodivergent individuals tend to have one focused area of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And if that focused area of interest becomes their career, mm-hmm. they tend to
excel in it.
Okay. So in a lot of creative fields, there are a lot of neurodivergent individuals who are now diagnosing themselves, a lot of Hollywood stars.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of earlier scientists, you know, in every single field, whether it's in sports, whether it's in medicine, whether it's in everything. But there is that hyper focus, that absolute concentration on what they really like, and they know it inside out, and they never feel like they're working when they do it.
Oh.
So they tend to be very, very successful in that. Exactly. And like I said, the attention to detail, they tend to be very empathetic. So the thing is, they absorb a lot of the energy and a lot of the emotions of other people.
Mm-hmm.
The way to show it is a little different, which is why a lot of people think that neurodivergent people are not empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're not, they just don't show it in the same way as neurotypical people do.
Okay.
So an example is that, you know, if you're saying a story of something that has happened to you and it's a sad story, a neurodivergent individual may say something sad that happened to them. And they're doing this to relate to you, not to turn the attention away from you.
Okay.
So
it can go other way around also.
That's what. But it depends on whether the society has an understanding of how this brain works. But what happens is, because neurodiversity is genetic, it tends to be that a parent is neurodivergent, one or both.
Uh-huh.
And then the child is neurodivergent.
It's 100%, doctor, that it is?
It is, yes.
Okay.
So automatically, sometimes, even if it's not diagnosed, mm-hmm. there's an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
That happens at least from the parent to the child. So, for example, recently only someone told me, you know, my son doesn't really like to go to parties and likes to hang out on the side. And then, but she turned around and said, but I'm also exactly like this.
She understood.
So that understanding is there. Mm-hmm. So she's not pushing him because she doesn't push herself.
Okay.
So automatically that understanding is there.
So it's important for the parents that if they have something like this, they should understand the children also.
Right. And same way a sibling also, if a parent understands, the sibling will understand.
Okay.
What becomes difficult is in the school age years, because peers may not always understand.
Absolutely.
And you may not always find a peer you can gel
comfort.
With. Comfort. Childhood, we always have this expectation that children should be a certain way.
Okay.
You know, it starts from even a teacher in a classroom. You know, a teacher will always say, if you turn your back, how do I know you're listening?
Exactly.
Look at the board.
Yes.
But now with neurodivergence, you know that even if they've turned their back, they can be listening.
Oh.
So, but because in a school, schools have certain rules. You know,
yes.
So all children are expected to follow the same set of rules. That's why children end up masking a lot more.
Yes.
And as they grow older, they find people like them.
Like-minded people.
Exactly. And then they don't have to mask so much and they end up making more friends.
Okay. So they are more comfortable when they grow up. The challenge is basically when they are young. Okay. Now my next question to you is you must be having some international client and Indian client. Do therapies differ over there?
So in the Indian context, with any person I work with outside India, therapy is mainly about the couple or the individual.
Hmm.
when it comes to India, therapy is about the family.
Okay.
So it's always, there are multiple people involved.
Yes.
You know, if I'm working with an individual, parents will be involved, siblings will be involved. If I'm working with a couple, in-laws will be involved.
Yes.
So
you have a big challenge.
Exactly. So there is a lot of all that.
Yes.
What I have seen based on personal experience, mm-hmm. Not any numbers, but in, like I said, like it runs in families.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have more understanding, more awareness. So say our generation, the generation younger than us, all of us have a better understanding.
Yes.
The older generation does not.
Yeah.
What happens with neurodivergence that is left undiagnosed?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, especially when it's the male member of a family,
yeah.
because they anyways are in the seat of control,
yeah, they dominate.
It turns into a sort of narcissism.
Okay.
And it becomes very difficult then for the couple, for anybody, because once it turns into a narcissism, mm-hmm. there is no understanding of how you're wired, what yes. works. So that becomes very difficult to navigate.
Yeah. So it means that you are ruling the whole family. And you are dominating overall.
So I'm working mainly with the couple.
Mm-hmm.
I work with the couple. But what ends up happening is, or I work with the individual. And mm-hmm. but what ends up happening is that I have to kind of teach them how to navigate this sort of narcissism with the parents.
Okay. Oh no, it must be such difficult task that time for you.
That is very hard.
Yeah, because you have to go back and you have to make them understand that it's not coming from here, it's somewhere else which is putting a pressure.
Exactly.
So this individual must have suppressed his feelings.
Exactly.
And then
it's turned into this.
This.
Which becomes very tough because it's, you know, as a person, you always say, okay, but I can explain it this way. I can show them this way. But when you're dealing with someone who is narcissistic,
yes.
no amount of explaining can help.
Yes. Explanation doesn't work over there.
At all.
Yeah.
So I have to teach ways.
Because they are very strong-headed.
Exactly. So I have to teach ways of how to draw clear boundaries,
okay.
how to protect what you have. And, you know, live your own life.
Yes. If they feel that this is coming from somewhere else and they feel that we need our peace of mind, in that case, they want to separate themselves from a joint family. Have you seen this type
yes.
of cases?
Yes. And then once you get into a nuclear family, it becomes much easier.
Oh, okay.
Much easier. But the problem in India is not even living so much. Sometimes it's living, but the biggest problem is the joint business.
Okay, yes, that is also.
And that's a very India-specific thing,
yeah.
you know, to have these family businesses.
But that is our root,
that
right?
is exactly. Yeah. But that, when you're dealing with someone who's narcissistic, becomes very challenging.
Yes. So in that case, how do you work with them, like as a couple or as a nuclear family? How do you work? Because it will be very challenging to change their mindset.
It's impossible to change their mindset.
Okay.
So what I have to do is to teach the individual how to make clear boundaries
mm-hmm.
and, you know, still protect what they have.
So you have to draw the line.
Exactly. And to basically teach them to stand up for themselves.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because the thing in dealing with a narcissist is that the more you stand up, it gets very ugly.
Yes.
But then eventually they get it. They get that boundary.
Yeah, as you already said so many times that they are very particular for detailing and all. This person is trying to deal with his family or his children, then for this person to adjust, there could be many things. It must be quite challenging for you as a therapist.
Beauty of a neurodivergent mind is that it's very compartmentalized.
Okay.
So when something is bothering them, it stays in that compartment, doesn't spill over to everything else.
Okay, it's like Almira, like
yes,
you have a compartment,
exactly.
you keep it there and then you
so
move
So that's
out.
Another very good strength.
Wow, that's a wonderful strength.
So they
I
are
say.
Able to do what they need to do.
Okay, they are quite focused then.
Exactly. They're able to do what they need to do without things trickling into one another and making everything a mess.
Yeah.
But it's also very different in men and in women.
Okay.
Because in women, women tend to get misdiagnosed a lot with anxiety
mm-hmm.
and with OCD or with bipolar disorder.
Okay.
When they could just be autistic. And that happens very, very often in women. And like I said, because they mask a lot.
Yes.
So throughout their childhood years, they are very good at picking up how other girls act and imitating their behavior and trying to fit in.
Okay.
So they do it at a very subconscious level. It's not even consciously that they're putting it on, but they do it.
Okay.
But then that leads to a lot of anxiety that comes
internally.
Out in other places, internally, eating disorders, sleep issues, unexplained pain, headaches, stomach aches, migraines.
Side effect of all
very,
this.
Very common in neurodivergent girls.
So with suppressing any feeling can lead to many problems in future also.
Yes, yes. Okay.
And doctor, what role does empathy play in this type of relationship?
So when we talk about empathy, there is what we call for a neurodivergent person is called the double empathy problem.
Okay.
it's being empathetic, but it's also the other person has to understand their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically, like I say, if I was to draw a six, okay, I'm seeing it as a six,
I'm
but you're seeing it as a nine,
yes.
Right? And it's for both people to get
uh-huh.
that it can be a six and it can be a nine. Uh-huh. There's not only one way of looking at it. And that's the biggest thing for a neurodivergent person to get, that there is a different perspective to something.
Okay.
Because they tend to be like, it's only my perspective.
So it's like that they have to understand and also appreciate others' perspective. That
yes.
is very important.
Yes.
And actually, it's very important in any relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, doctor, my next question will be, like, what are the challenges as an adult they face in their workplace?
Okay. So, in the workplace, what happens with a neurodivergent mind is it also requires a lot of rest.
Okay.
So, many times adults say that, you know, they'll do something like maybe socialize
mm-hmm.
and go out one night,
mm-hmm.
two nights,
mm-hmm.
three nights. Then by the fourth night, their battery has completely drained.
Discharged.
And there's nothing left and they want to just curl up under the blanket in the dark and sleep.
Okay.
When they're at the party, they are the life of the party.
Oh, wow.
So it's not like they're not. But that takes a toll.
Yes.
So similarly at work,
mm-hmm.
you know, this 9-to-5 job, you know, coming in on time, leaving on time. Like those sort of structures are very hard for a neurodivergent person.
Okay.
Because sometimes they work a lot better based on their own
comfort.
Timing.
Doctor, what type of changes an organization should make so that they can accommodate neurodiverse people at their workplace?
So a lot of organizations now, especially in the US and all, are making a lot of these accommodations for neurodivergent individuals.
Okay.
Things like giving the flexibility of work from home on certain days.
I think must be after the COVID they
after
realized.
After COVID, yes. And that really helps a neurodivergent
yes.
person because sometimes, like I said, they're not able to keep to this 9-to-5.
Okay.
So sometimes they may wake up in the afternoon, but still work till late in the night.
Okay.
So the amount of work getting done gets done.
Okay.
But they may not be able to keep to these regular hours.
Mm-hmm.
So forcing them into
so
a
routine
desk,
is not their cup of tea.
Exactly. You know, for some.
Some.
For
exactly.
some, they love the routine.
Huh.
But for some, keeping to this, you know, very structured desk job
mm-hmm.
doesn't help.
No.
The other thing is, you know, allowing things like movement, allowing
mm-hmm.
things like any sort of sensory aids that
mm-hmm.
they may need.
Mm-hmm.
Things like noise-canceling headphones. So now you get these loop earplugs
yes.
that you can just put in that cancel out background noise.
Yes.
That really helps people because sometimes they get very distracted by background noise.
Okay.
So that's one thing. Sometimes they may require to just keep something in their hand to fidget with, like
uh-huh.
a pen or, anything. Or sometimes they may, those standing desks help. Because, you know, sitting for such a long time may be really
difficult.
They're
not comfortable.
Or, you know, just allowing them to walk around
mm-hmm.
and work. Mm. All those sorts of things help.
Okay.
But taking frequent breaks is very important.
That is required for them.
That is very important because actually their productivity is very high. So
because they focus.
Exactly, hyper-focus.
They're hyper-focused.
So they're hyper-focused. So even if they're given a break,
mm-hmm.
they will still do double the amount of work.
Oh.
But they need those breaks.
So that's why I think organization has figured it out that they are
yes.
a very good and smart workforce. Just that they need a different type of atmosphere
exactly.
to work on.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. Doctor, what are some misconceptions regarding this neurodivergent people?
So there are a lot of misconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Many times when I use the term neurodivergent, I can see the opposite person's expression change
yes.
because they start thinking, oh my God, what is
wrong?
You know, something is really wrong.
Yeah.
that I see in a partner. Usually the individual themselves has figured it out.
Okay.
So they figured it out and they are quite confident with it.
Oh.
It's the partner that feels, oh my God.
That's a shock for another person.
Or the parent that feels, oh my God. Yeah, or, you know, things like that. But misconceptions are that, you know, everyone looks at it as a disability.
Yes.
So they think, oh, this person's going to need lifelong support. You know, after me, what, you know, are they going to be successful? Are they going to be this? Are they going to be that? And those are all misconceptions because, like I said, it's a wide spectrum. There are people who have high support needs who definitely will need lifelong support.
Those are severe cases.
But there are enough people who have lower support needs and are very successful. Mm. So, but like I said, there are many celebrities who are coming out now and saying that they're neurodivergent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they require certain accommodations in their life, which they now can understand about themselves and they do because of the awareness. But they are very successful.
That can change from young age to adulthood.
So sometimes what happens in kids, many times you see kids who speak late. So like Elon Musk said, he spoke after seven. So many times kids speak late. So that becomes a little bit of a challenge in the young years and a big worry. And then once they pick up speech, I think that becomes a lot easier for parents.
And also for the child to communicate.
For the child. The problem that happens is, and what I've seen, is that many times children get a diagnosis when they're little. Because a lot of the traits are very apparent when they're small. And parents are aware of it. But then once the child becomes verbal and once the child, you know, is at school and all, they don't share that information with the child. So when they grow up and they have mental health challenges, which is 80% of neurodivergent people have mental health challenges, then they start thinking, what is wrong with me? Because they have not learned that they are wired differently. That has not been said to them earlier.
So then they think, what's wrong? So do you think that helps, doctor, if we tell them before?
So that's a lot of what we do at my clinic. We educate children about how they are wired from a young age. So that they grow up with that
confidence
and that they see it as a strength instead of thinking, what's wrong with me?
Exactly. That's, you know? That will make a lot of difference.
Because society is designed designed for neurotypical people. So a neurodivergent person anyways feels like they are out of place. You know, and so if you teach them that it's a strength, you know, and that they can relate to other people, then they come from a place of confidence.
And they take decisions differently, but they are also human being and they are also part of the group. So they always keep on justifying themselves. We are also having strength and we can also do. So mental health is always being knocked. Like, am I okay or not? Am I good for this society or not?
That if you question, don't reveal all this, then that always becomes a question mark.
And then later half, then it becomes like you are suppressing your emotions and there will be n numbers of mental health issues.
And physical issues also. Like I said, like the migraines and body pain and all of this happens.
That's really sad. Like, our society should try to open up and discuss more on this topic. I think that may help people to understand this, that this is not a disability. It's just that people are differently wired. So, doctor, in neurodiversity case, do you think there has to be some changes so that these people are comfortable and they can do a better job in...
So if they have a diagnosis, then usually they should definitely reveal it to the university or to the college or whatever and get whatever accommodations they need. Like sometimes, you know, someone with an attention deficit may take longer to finish a paper. So to get that extra time.
But do they give?
They do give. They do give.
And does it come in the certificate? No.
No, not in the completion. No. But things like that, you know, so they can advocate for themselves if they only understand what is their strength and what is their weakness.
Only when they are speaking to any of the therapist, that may also help. And they are open to discussion. And doctor, what are the resource or support network as a family we have in India?
So there are a lot of support groups for neurodivergent individuals, adults. I wish there were more social groups. I also wish that people spoke about it more openly, you know, especially in marriages, because it's nobody talks about it. But it's a thing that a lot of people struggle with. But that sort of openness has not happened yet. But whereas abroad, it's very, very common. Like, kids themselves are talking about it openly. So, it's just not that common here yet.
So, you have already answered this, but just I will ask you once more for my audience, that people who are neurodivergent, successful in their life?
Very successful. So, some of the most successful people are neurodivergent. So, like I said, in every single field, whether it's creative, whether it's technical, you know, they tend to be very, very successful because they really can hyper-focus and they can see things in a very different perspective.
So how do a partner looks into this? Because for a partner, it must be very difficult if somebody is very hyper-focused on particular thing. Maybe it could be an office job or at house for cleaning or something. Then her life must be in a mess, thinking that why is he so hyper about a particular thing. Then how do you handle as a doctor in that case?
So that's what to figure out between them. Like say one person is very focused on their job or their career or whatever it is. It's basically, you know, really showing the other person that, okay, you know, this is the time that they can take out, trying to work within their timetable for the week and saying, okay, this much time keep for the kids, this much time keep for exercise, this much time keep for this, and making it sort of like a plan to follow.
So they work
really breaking it down.
So they work on small, small aspects.
They work much better when it's very specific. So if I say, you know, sitting on my chair, say, oh, you should spend more time with your kids. That doesn't mean anything. So what time? Sunday morning? Saturday afternoon?
They will become so particular.
Right. So when we make it that specific, then it becomes a lot easier to follow. And then once they get the hang of it, they get the hang of it.
Then they are very good.
Exactly.
So just that, that extra push is required and detailing is required. I think then they work wonderful.
So to go from that, marriage counseling for neurodivergent individuals actually goes very quickly. Because it's like a light switch. You know, once they get it, they get it.
Or otherwise?
And the changes get made very quickly.
Or otherwise, doctor?
But otherwise, it becomes a big problem because then you're just going in circles. When you've not understood the neurodiversity, you're just going in circles and you're wondering why the therapy is not working. You know, why is this person not understanding?
That's what.
So like, you have to speak the same language. That's the main thing.
So, doctor, it's very important here that they should understand others. Person's point of view and appreciate what the person is saying and try to change in their relationship in day-to-day life.
So the biggest change that I say for a neurotypical person to make if they're in a relationship is be direct and be specific. And I think that is something, especially in Indian culture, that we are taught to not be. You know, like if we go to someone's house and someone says, no, will you eat more? No, I'm okay. Even though you may want more. So as a culture only, we are taught to not say exactly what's on our mind. Now, what happens with a neurodivergent person is if you don't say exactly what's on your mind, they are not going to guess it. They will leave it and move on. And then you will think they don't care. So the big thing to change is be direct, be specific. You want something, say
tell
it.
Tell them.
How you want it, say it.
But sometimes people are not comfortable.
They're not comfortable and that takes them a lot of practice. And that also I met with a lot of resistance. Why should I say it? They should understand.
Because everybody they think if I say, then what is left?
They should read my mood. They should understand how I'm feeling. I understand that, but it takes the neurodivergent person also time to adjust to the other person's mood. Eventually, they begin to understand, okay, you know, this body position, this means, okay, right now not feeling great. I won't ask too many questions. So they get that,
But
it takes some time. So till it does, it's good to be direct and very honest. And especially in India, when we have mixed marriages,
custom
and customs are different, traditions are different. it's very, very good to be perfectly direct and specific, because otherwise really the neurodivergent person will not understand what to do. And the neurodivergent person tends to have grown up in a neurodivergent household. So customs and traditions are as per that household.
Yes.
Now, if you are getting with somebody else who has different customs and traditions, even if the religion is the same, but the customs are different, then it's not like they're not open to doing it, but you have to be clear about what it is.
Yes.
You know?
Understood, doctor.
So that.
You have to be very specific what you want from them.
Exactly.
And you are saying that if you are clear, then I think your life is sorted.
Much easier. Much easier.
So that is the therapy you give them. Is early detection really helps in their life, in the relationship or in somebody's marriage?
So it really helps, because without the proper diagnosis, without a proper understanding of this neurodiversity framework in therapy, the neurotypical partner faces a lot of trauma. Because from the beginning, they feel that something's wrong with them. And they internalize that and they keep trying.
Doubting
themselves and trying ways, and it doesn't seem to be working.
Okay.
Because they've not understood how to communicate with their neurodivergent partner.
Yes.
So there is a lot of, like I said, you know, this, they should understand, they should know what I'm feeling. Now, when the person doesn't understand, then this all gets internalized as, you know, I'm not being noticed, I'm not being appreciated, I'm not valued.
Yes.
So they feel a lot of that. And, you know, sometimes that just goes on, then they have kids, you know, then they feel even more undervalued. So those are the sorts of traumas that I deal with, that we work on unlearning after we get a diagnosis. A lot of people now, a lot of younger individuals come for premarital counseling. So where they feel that their partner may be neurodivergent or they themselves may be neurodivergent. So what are the things that can come up? What are the things that, you know, we should be watchful for? And, you know, things I work on is basically trying to visualize what married life will look like. What does the routine look like? What does day-to-day look like? Who will take care of what? So, you know, because a lot of times for neurodivergent adults, you know, and I say this a lot in therapy, is that they like to know what to expect.
They don't like surprises.
To jump in to something. So it's the same thing as, you know, there are people who will go to a restaurant. Some people will just walk into the restaurant. Some people will have seen the menu, decided what they're going to order from before and then go. So the same with neurodivergent people. They like to know what's going to happen. So when you help them kind of think through that, their anxiety reduces.
So it makes it little comfortable
for them. It makes it a lot more comfortable. It doesn't always have to follow that exact path, but at least they have some idea. So that really helps.
So doctor, this is my last question to you. The LGBTQ individuals are neurodiverse?
A lot of neurodivergent individuals identify as LGBTQ+. There are many different theories for this. Some say because neurodivergent individuals don't have such strict, you know, they don't follow social norms so strictly. They tend to be a lot more gender fluid. There are many other theories, but yes, it is very, very common in neurodivergent individuals.
So, doctor, what message do you want to give to our audience?
What I'd like to say is educate yourself as much as you can about neurodiversity. It's a part of our gene pool. It's not something that we can ignore. Each and every one of us has neurodivergent friends, family, people we know and love, and we need to respect that diversity. There is a very famous saying by Temple Grandin, a very famous autistic woman, who said that if you remove autism from the gene pool, there'd be a bunch of cavemen standing around in a cave chatting and nothing would have really gone ahead. So, you know, embrace that diversity. And for parents, I would say, if you do notice that your child is different in certain ways, celebrate that difference. Teach them how to celebrate it instead of forcing them to be a particular way.
Make it as a strength.
Exactly. And for adults, I would say, again, if you notice any differences, any challenges that come up in your marriage or relationship or with friends also, seek help to kind of bridge that gap of communication. And the other thing that I would say to doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, teachers, educate yourself on neurodiversity. Yes. It's a part of everybody that you deal with. And it's important for every single person to know about it.
Thank you, Dr. Marzia, for coming to our set and talking on such a wonderful topic, neurodiversity. And I must say that the tips which you have given, I hope as a society we can be more understanding and supportive to this set of people. We can embrace neurodiversity.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this talk.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Thank you all for tuning into today's podcast on neurodiversity. We trust that our discussion with Dr. Marzia has provided valuable insights on how to improve our relationship and by embracing neurodiversity. There are many companies that have made significant strides in encouraging neurodiversity like Amazon, SAP, JP Morgan, Cisco, etc., providing them training, mentorship and accommodation too. It promotes the idea that everyone has value and something meaningful to contribute, regardless of how their brain is wired. If you think you need an expert, you can reach out to our guest using the details provided in description box. And stay tuned for more insightful conversation on Empyrea Connect. Thank you and stay safe. Oh, 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 oh